And joining us on the line is a phenomenal chef, cook, and all-around great person. Her name is Katie Workman. You've probably heard of her already if you listen to NPR on a regular basis, especially to The Splendid Table, and have probably picked up her book, her Mom 100 cookbook. Welcome to El Paso Primetime, Katie.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
You have such a neat way of putting food in front of people who may be reluctant to change their diet away from the simple things like fish sticks.
Yep.
How did you come up with such a plan?
Well, it's really, it occurred to me that so many parents are feeling, and not just parents, anybody who's the person sort of at the stove on a regular basis, are feeling really sort of stymied and paralyzed by dinner coming around, as it does every day at the same time. And people get very anxious about what they're going to make and how it's going to work for everyone at the table. And especially if you have kids or anybody in your family that's just not a really adventurous eater, you think, oh, I want to make this, but I don't think that they're going to like it, or maybe they're not going to try it, or maybe you have a vegetarian in your house, maybe you have somebody who's really spice averse, and you start to feel like you need to be a short order cook in order to please everybody. But that's just not what anyone wants to do, and it doesn't make any sense. So I came up with 100 recipes that are all flexible. They all have a fork in the road element, which means that you can make the recipe up to a certain point, separate some of it out and keep it on the plainer and simpler side, or keep it in a vegetarian way, or keep it just on a less spicy, in the less spicy mode, and then you continue with the rest of the recipe, adding more spice, maybe adding meat, adding some other ingredients that not everyone at the table would be excited about. And you end up with two versions or more of one recipe. So you're not creating extra work for yourself, and everyone at the table is getting a version that he or she really likes.
Katie, your new cookbook is called Dinner Solved, and indeed it is the fork in the road that actually it stretches beyond anything that I've ever thought about, and that's pretty cool because I used to be a picky eater when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
What did you not like? Do you remember?
Yeah, I didn't like. I didn't like fish if it had eyes.
Yep.
And Brussels sprouts. I hated Brussels sprouts.
Well, those are two super common things that kids hate, and hopefully I have a recipe for each one of those things. Not fish with eyes, I have to say, fish without eyes in the book. But, you know, there's a lot of, when did you outgrow it, or have you not outgrown it? Or
I did. I started outgrowing it as soon as I started turning 17 and 18 and figured out that if I wanted to hang with a bunch of people at college, I better not be a snob.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. I write in the first book, the Mom 100 book, I write about the wonderful benefits of older kid peer pressure. Not in the bad peer pressure way, but we were at a friend's house for dinner years ago when my children were quite young, and they had teenage kids, and my kids were sitting next to them, and I looked down, and my kids were eating, I remember it so clearly, it was a Thai shrimp curry soup. And my kids were just slurping it up like crazy because the teenagers were eating it, and they just didn't want to look like uncool. So sometimes it is a little bit of peer pressure that can make you just say, you know what, I got to give this a shot.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think it's a wonderful way to introduce foods to other kids in not so an intrusive sort of a way.
Right. Well, you don't want to, you absolutely, when you start to force kids to try things, I mean, you do want your kids to try things, but when sit at the table until you've eaten every last lima bean on your plate thing, that's not really that appealing anymore for the kids or the parents. So we have to find other solutions and sort of gradually moving them towards some of the more sophisticated flavors or something that's more spicy by having them see you eat it, and then maybe they're having a slightly less spicy version of fried chicken, but maybe they're going to take a bite of yours, and maybe next time when you're making it, they'll say, you know what, I actually want mine with the spicy flour this time.
One of the things that you write about in your new book, Dinner Solved, is the whole notion about appetizer. I love the photo and the recipe for savory zucchini puff pastry tarts. That tells me that I could serve this to vegans and to omnivores together, and everybody would agree.
Yep. It's definitely, it's It's one of those really easy things, and you know, in some cases, falling back on a prepared food like frozen puff pastry is so great, and it means that you're going to have this amazing, sophisticated tart on the table really quickly, really easily. And even those of us who love cooking, I'm not making my own puff pastry. I don't have that kind of time. So, you know, I think taking, you know, finding the products and the shortcuts and the ingredients that make our lives easier is just critical.
I used to think that I was kind of a savvy sort of a cook in the kitchen and stuff. And I started reading everything that you've offered in this book. And one of the things that really intrigued me is how you were able to substitute cauliflower for chicken in that one dish, chicken tikka masala. How did you come up with that?
You know, it's Indian food is, you know, largely vegetarian. There's a lot of dishes in the Indian cuisine that are vegetarian, and I thought to myself, well, of course you could have a cauliflower curry, and then I thought, well, of course you could have a chicken curry, and then I thought, well, why wouldn't you take the same curry mixture and have both? So you marinate the chicken and or the cauliflower in the yogurt marinade. You make up one batch of this very simple tomato sauce that's spiked with those great Indian seasonings, and then you just broil up the cauliflower and or the chicken and toss it with the hot sauce, and you have two options for your home.
One of the things I want to get back to, because we've been talking about, is about kids and foods. And it bothers me that the psychological community, American Psychological Association and other entities are trying to say that if kids who are picky eaters develop mental problems and issues later on in life. And that's just not necessarily so, I think. I think all it is just introducing a child to new foods in an inventive sort of a way so that they embrace it rather than to turn it away.
It seems like every day there's a new study about something that is just going to make all of us parents feel a little bit more like poop. But I have to say, I think you have to take so much of it with a grain of salt. And anything that stops you from just getting into the kitchen and trying to make dinner for your family on an occasional or a frequent basis is really not our friends, right? These studies and these pronouncements that make us feel more nervous or more like we're doing a poor job as a parent, it's just they're completely unhelpful. And I have to say that it doesn't really resonate with me as a study that makes a whole lot of sense. I agree with you, but we do have to just keep trying and, you know, serve things in small portions and serve things again and try not to get in a battle of wills with your kid and invite over friends who have kids who are really adventurous eaters so that your kid might try to, you know, keep up in a good way.
Yeah. Now, how did you get your kids involved in cooking?
Well, I am in the kitchen an enormous amount of time. So if they want to hang out with me, that's where I can be found pretty much. But they're also, they'd like to do a little experiment. And, you know, cooking is in many ways science. So if, you know, if you try to get your kids engaged with the, like, you know, what do you think happens if, what would happen if you added twice as much baking soda? And granted, you're going to have a couple really big flops along the way, but it's part of the learning curve. And, you know, the first time your kid cracks an egg, that egg is probably going to end up on the counter or the floor, and you're going to have lost an egg, but that's the only way that somebody learns how to crack an egg. And if your kids feel that there's sort of some freedom and flexibility in the kitchen for them to experiment and them to play around and them to make mistakes, then it becomes, you know, it's like a science set. It's a very large science kit.
I like how you've redesigned the notion of making a salad and eating a salad. To me, it makes a whole lot of sense. I've watched the evolution of salad since I was a kid, from lettuce and tomato and a Thousand Island dressing. Now it's a science to make it all really delectable. And I like that arugula and kale is now coming back into vogue.
I love arugula, and kale is, gosh, I mean, kale is almost so in vogue, it's almost out of vogue again.
Yeah. So when you start introducing things like this to other people, do you do it in a gradual sort of a way, or do you just You know, here we go. Here's our dinner, and I hope you like it.
It's really more of a here's our dinner and hope you like it. And in terms of, I mean, the kale, mm-hmm. for instance, you know, the kale, my kid went to a supermarket, and they were handing out samples of one of their homemade soups, and it was a kale and sausage soup with potatoes or something in it. And first of all, they're handing it out in these, like, tiny little containers that have about 2 tablespoons of food in them. So your kid's more curious and more likely to give something like that a try. Very small, accessible, manageable portion. And he just thought, this is great. And I didn't say to him, that's kale, you know. You're eating kale. I didn't think you'd like kale. Kale's a vegetable. I just said, oh, well, let me try to make that soup at home again. And frankly, pairing kale with sausage is never a bad idea. Mm-hmm. You know, using something that your kid likes already to introduce a new ingredient that you're not sure about mm-hmm. is a really good tactic.
One of the things that I'm good at is destroying a good pot roast. I turn that into shoe leather almost immediately. And in your book, the Spanish style beef pot roast comes out so delectable and so tender. I just told you I know how to destroy it. How do we not destroy one?
you cannot rush cooking pot roast or any of those kinds of tough cuts of meat. They need long, slow cooking. The oven can't go above 350 max. The whole notion of, well, if I put it up to 400, couldn't it be done in 2 hours instead of 3? Nope, shoe leather, absolutely. Low and slow, and lots of liquid for it to braise in.
Mm, okay. Let me move on to this one thing, because I'm being single, rush in, rush out, got to do this, got to do that. One dish meal seemed to be the perfect way to sustain my life anyway. Mm-hmm. So in designing these one dish meals, were you thinking in terms about, you know, the family and doing this? Or is this for people on the go, or is it for both?
It's really for both. It really is. I mean, you know, there's a lot of the recipes in the book will, you know, make enough to serve 4 or 6 or sometimes even more. So, but most of them can be cut in half, and you can make just enough. Or you can make it, a lot of the dishes can be divided in half, and half can be frozen. So the chicken vegetable pot pie casserole, that could easily be cut in half. Or you could just make 2 smaller casseroles and freeze one of them and have something to look forward to later in the month.
One of the recipes that I tried a couple of weeks ago is this Korean sesame tofu and mushrooms. Mm-hmm. I'm also good at destroying tofu as well.
A lot of people are good at that.
But your recipe, yeah, I guess so. The sad part is that I almost destroyed an entire thing of tofu. But the good part is that I got to experiment with your book, and it made a whole lot of sense.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Well, but, you know, this is, when you're cooking tofu, you know, that's something you really want to cook it over high heat and make sure to let it get a good sear. If you're looking for it to have, you know, not be soft, and you're looking for it to have a good browned caramelized texture, don't move it around so much. Let it sit in the pan so that it has a chance to really brown on the bottom before you flip it with a metal spatula.
Okay. I know we're up against the clock, Katie, and I'd love for you to come back to El Paso Primetime whenever we can, so I'll get a hold of you one way or the other so you can come back and we can talk about recipes for the holidays, perhaps.
Okay, that sounds great. I'd love to.
Katie Workman has been our guest on El Paso Primetime. Her new book is called Dinner Solved, 100 Ingenious Recipes That Make the Whole Family Happy, including you. Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.